Tonight, high temperatures are torching the nation.
At least 50 million people in the western U.S. have been living with the devastating consequences of a record-shattering heat wave for more than a week now.
More than 70 million people remain under heat alerts.
The heat wave turning deadly now, the searing temperatures coast to coast.
Today on Vox Talks Economics, how does heat stress caused by climate change affect asset prices? Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Center for Economic Policy Research. My name's Tim Phillips. Now, every week we bring you the best new research in economics. So remember to subscribe and follow us on Instagram as well. Climate change increases the risk from natural hazards, but how does this change the cost of issuing debt or the return on equities? Viral Acharya of the Stern School at NYU is one of the authors of a new discussion paper that investigates how climate risk is priced, and he joins me now. Viral, welcome back to Vox Talks Economics.
Thank you, Tim. It's my pleasure to be back.
I talked in a slightly hand-wavy way about natural hazards. What are the sorts of natural hazards we could consider here?
The ones we are looking at in our research are heat stress, hurricanes, sea level rise, droughts. All of these are usually the natural disasters that are studied. You will see that heat stress, unlike hurricanes or droughts, is a bit more general. Heat stress could manifest itself in the form of forest fires, great need to use air conditioning for an entire summer at stretch. But these are the natural disasters that we look at. And I want to stress that some of them are more salient in that you have a hurricane with a specific name, just like the one we've had in Florida recently. Whereas heat waves don't necessarily always have names, even though in California now there is a movement towards designating heat waves by specific names so that it becomes more salient in people's minds.
In this research, you haven't just tried to evaluate all natural hazards here. You focus down on heat stress. I suppose normally you'd say you haven't tried to boil the ocean, but that's a rather unfortunate metaphor in this case. Is heat stress more significant as a risk at the moment than these other aspects of climate change?
Yes. So while our research study is mostly focused on heat stress, we do examine this question that you just asked, which is, does heat stress matter for the cost of debt and the cost of equity more than some of these other natural disasters, which historically attracted far more attention? We find in data that indeed heat stress does seem more relevant. It also seems more relevant in the last 7 to 8 years. And we think there's a good reason for this, which is that we find that the gradient over which heat stress varies across geographies is extremely slow. So what do I mean by that? You know, parts of Florida are exposed to hurricanes, but certain inner parts of Florida are not as exposed. That distinction is quite sharp even within the same state. In contrast, the gradient of heat stress is very gradual. You know, there are states in United States, for example, which as an entire set are very exposed to heat stress. But more generally, if you look at the modeling of heat stress by climate scientists, it's really based on the entire planet actually becoming hotter by certain temperatures in a stress scenario, say in 50 or 100 years down the line. For most of us, the exposure to climate change was really through the term global warming. And so there's a sense in which heat stress is not as easy to diversify. Companies cannot just relocate their activities necessarily to different parts of the world and get around heat stress completely. It would require moving across like big geographies in terms of relocation. But more importantly, even across geographies, as time is going by, we are realizing that the planet might be heating up as a whole. And so the gains to diversifying heat risk are not that high. And we think this is one primary reason why this risk cannot be insured. It cannot be diversified that easily. And therefore, investors are bound to say, if you are exposed to heat risk, you're likely exposed to damages. I need to be compensated for bearing that risk in financing you.
Yeah, before we dive into the data on asset prices and how this risk is priced, if we take one step back, what are the channels through which heat stress does affect economic activity?
Let's go back to some of the three channels that we discussed earlier. You know, it could manifest itself as forest fires, in which case there are big damages to take care of. It could manifest itself as potentially droughts, in which case you have to deal with water supply issues, and that's a huge impact on the quality of life. It could manifest itself in the form of extreme temperatures, which make worker productivity quite low, especially in exposed industries such as construction, mining, agriculture, where, you know, workers need to be out there, and extreme temperatures show that their productivity declines. Not just that, in some states in the United States now, bills are being passed which require companies to maintain flexible working hours when temperatures in a month or a week cross a certain threshold level. Now, in some other parts of the world, take India, for example, summers can be extremely hot, and then air conditioning demand becomes very high, and that can put a lot of pressure on the power grid, because suddenly there's a huge increase in energy consumption. If most of your power is getting generated thermally, then, you know, that means greater needs to burn coal and so on. So all of these are channels through which heat stress can lead to economic damages. I would say, quantitatively, in the measures that we have looked at based on research by other climate scientists, lower worker productivity and higher energy bills, these two seem to be the two primary contributors to economic damages related to heat stress.
If you want to hear more on the topic, check out the episode called The Financial System and Climate Risk from May 2021. Also in November 2019, we asked, can the stock market help save the planet?
You're evaluating this. Asset prices, they're pretty easy to get hold of. But you also need some kind of measure of how heat stress is affecting the, for bonds, municipalities and firms, for stocks, the firms. Where do you get that data?
So most of what we do relies on two data sets. One data set is based on a paper published in Science in 2017. This is based on a model called CGLAS. You know, it's a very long acronym, which I actually don't remember right now, but whose full form I don't remember. But it's essentially climate scientists build sort of unit geography level models of how to project temperature scenarios far ahead of time. So there's a baseline scenario called RCP 8.5 in the climate scientist terms. It's an extreme scenario. It says that temperatures are going to rise by 5 degrees Celsius on the whole over the planet, say 100 years from now. And then they do sort of county by county level modeling.
That is the
average scenario that the planet is subject to. What's going to be the histogram or the distribution of temperatures that's likely going to arise at a given county? So, for example, you could have a different distribution for Orlando versus Miami, or in, say, different cities, even within a very hot state like Arizona, for example. Now, you can use these temperature distributions to then ask a question: in this stress scenario, how many days in a year are above, say, 100 degree Fahrenheit or 110 degree Fahrenheit. Now, you can consider those as your extreme hot days when worker productivity comes down or when energy consumption increases very significantly. What is crucial is not so much that this scenario is going to realize, but what is crucial is that the scenario gives you a way of ranking different geographies in terms of their heat stress exposure. I think an analogy with bank stress tests here would be useful. No particular stress scenario that the banking regulators consider is the only scenario that's going to materialize. But what they are trying to understand is that in a reasonably plausible stress scenario, how do different banks rank from the most vulnerable to the least vulnerable? And the CGLAS method, based on the Science paper, does exactly that. It tells you how different geographies, not just in the United States, but in principle across the world, are exposed in terms of their heat, number of hot days, economic damages, etc., in that one heat stress scenario. The second measure that we use is from a company called 427. They do some similar analysis of this type. But they also recognize that companies have locations in different geographies. So, you know, you could have their sales or employees or number of plants in different geographies. And once you have the temperature distribution at each of these geographies, they aggregate these distributions across different geographies to come up with a single heat score for a given company. The 427 measure is a bit of a black box. We only get a ranking or a score from 0 to 100. In contrast, the Seaglass methodology gives us an entire distribution of temperatures at the level of each geography. The Seaglass measure, therefore, the unit is a county-level unit. We can readily employ it for municipalities. The 427 measure is available both for county-level data as well as for companies for which you need to combine geographic information into a company-level heat score.
So, Viral, if this heat stress is priced in, what impacts are you looking for in this data? What are we likely to see as an impact on asset prices?
So what we find is that if you do sort of a one standard deviation shock across geographies, so you move from, say, within Florida, you move from Miami to Orlando, or within Arizona, you move from a city to another city, which is one standard deviation hotter, that increases the cost of borrowing for that municipality by about 15 to 20 basis points on average. I'll come back to a few qualifiers on this. In case of companies, we find that the effect is strong, primarily for sub-investment grade rated companies or junk rated companies. Their borrowing cost for a one standard deviation shock in the 427 measure is about 40 basis points of extra borrowing cost. And when we look at the cost of issuing equity, that's higher on average also by a similar magnitude of about 0.4 to 0.5% per annum. Now, these effects, I stress, are primarily there in lower quality companies, so sub-investment grade companies. In case of municipalities, they are primarily observed in what are called as revenue-only bonds, where you don't have the entire tax pool of the state diversifying the payments to the bondholders, but it's just coming from an individual utility or an enterprise. In case of companies as well as municipalities, we find that the effects are there more strongly in longer term bonds than in shorter term bonds, because climate change is sort of evolving into, I would say, a medium term to long term risk, or at least the risk picks up more at these horizons. And finally, the effects we find are quite consistent between these two measures that I described, the Seaglass method or the 427 measure. Of course, as I described earlier, both measures can be used only for municipalities, whereas for companies, we have to use the 427 measure.
Well, it's interesting that risk is now being priced in, but given that this data is available and the way that financial markets work, why would we not expect it to be priced in?
So, Tim, you made an important point, which is that we are seeing these risks being priced more starting in 2013 to 15 period. And you might say, you know, we knew the planet was getting hot. There's no news that Arizona is hotter than, say, New York, for example. And
yes,
so this gradient was always known to investors all along. So one reason why the risks are getting priced now, but perhaps were not getting priced earlier, one reason could be that even though we knew the gradient across geographies of exposure to temperature or heat stress risk, the risk has actually increased over time. You know, one aspect of climate change that's important to keep in mind is that it's an inherently time-varying phenomenon. It's something that's evolving over time. So that's one reason, which is that the risk itself could have increased over time, so that even though the premium on risk was the same, it's now actually becoming observed in a quantitative manner that we can discern in data. Second reason, which is equally important and plausible, is that there could be learning. Because this is a time-varying risk, it's evolving. It's not that we knew everything about this all along. For instance, we didn't have quantitative measures to rank geographies at a county level, even though we knew that Arizona is going to be warmer than, say, New York State. So the climate science methodologies have been evolving over time. Investors are seeing manifestations of heat stress in the form of forest fires, heat waves, droughts, extra air conditioning needs, loss of worker productivity. All of this is now entering data gradually year by year as more and more of these stresses manifest. And the third reason that perhaps could also be relevant to the pricing of risk is that there has been greater activism amongst investors on getting companies to actually be more responsive to managing their climate risk. They want companies to reduce their physical exposures to risk. They want companies to take adaptive or mitigating measures to reduce these risks. And so this institutional activism to deal with climate change, which also I think is a more of a phenomenon of the last decade, could explain why the pricing of heat stress risk seems more prevalent in the last 10 years than in the years before.
You mentioned before that heat stress risk can be broken down into a different economic effect. Can you back out from your data any suggestion as to which aspects of heat stress risk are raising the cost of borrowing or creating that risk premium on equities?
So unfortunately, the measures that we get from Seaglass and 427, they are sort of aggregate measures. We do have their individual decomposition, say in case of Seaglass, into losses due to worker productivity and losses due to energy consumption needs. And we do find that these two do show up quite significantly. So how do we do that? So for example, you could have sectors which are more exposed, like mining, construction, and farming, versus less exposed sectors such as financials or services. You know, those are not as exposed to these risks. And we do find that the effects are stronger in the sectors where the worker productivity is more likely to be affected. Now, having said that, what we do find is that ultimately, both the Seaglass and the 427 measures, you can get a fair bit of what they are capturing just by looking at historical temperature data at the county level in the geographies, say, of the United States, which is the laboratory setting that we look at. What do I mean by that? You can go back and look at the temperatures. You know, there are various types. There's a dry bulb temperature measure. There's a wet bulb temperature measure that adjusts for humidity to an extent. And when we do these, we find that both the level of the temperature historically, as well as its variability, both of them are correlated with the measures that we looked at. And that makes sense because a region that is more exposed is getting hotter on average, but a region that is more exposed is also having more extreme realizations of temperatures over time. Now, this point is important because it says that it's not so crucial just to rank geographies as to whether you use temperature data directly or whether you use the data on economic damages. What the economic damages data help you with is to make sense of the risk premium or the coefficients that we are estimating. Because ultimately, you want to know if a municipality is losing a certain 0.1% of GDP due to heat stress exposure in the stress scenario, what does that translate into an expected loss that the investors are charging them for? Similarly, if you think a company is going to lose a certain proportion of its cash flows or its default probability is increasing by, say, 0.4% or 40 basis points, how much of an extra credit risk premium would they be paying in their borrowing costs from doing that?
You only have to turn on your television to see that some regions, some municipalities are already suffering quite severe effects from heat stress. And of course, those effects are not manifested equally everywhere. I would assume that from your data, this means that those municipalities that are going to have to invest the most to mitigate the effects of heat stress from climate change are also the ones that are having the biggest impact on the cost of their borrowing. They're being affected twice over by the same phenomenon.
Absolutely. And I think for municipalities, mitigation is not as easy as it is for corporations because they simply can't change their location or, you know, shift workers around from more exposed to less exposed regions. I think it highlights that adaptive measures are key for municipalities. If they can shift to cheaper sources of energy as soon as possible, that might be good for them. If they have a more diversified way of generating their cash flows rather than being heavily exposed to a heat stress sensitive sector like mining or construction or farming, that would be better for them. Equally importantly for municipalities, I would say, to the extent that some insurance might be available globally, they may want to look into hedging the risk in these insurance markets. In fact, it's been a puzzle to us. While we understand that heat stress is harder to diversify than other sources of risk, it's been somewhat of a puzzle to us as to why the insurance products are not available. One reason could be that heat stress, as I was describing, is a bit amorphous. It doesn't have a salient aspect to it like a specific hurricane or a tornado or some kind of flooding event that takes place. Instead, heat stress is a little bit more amorphous. It takes many forms, as we have been discussing. And therefore, maybe the move of some states such as California to label the heat waves could actually be a step forward, because once you are more specific in naming heat waves as natural disasters, maybe that creates a room for financial products to now use that designation as a way to write products on. And therefore, we are interested in seeing whether these insurance markets may actually develop over time. If yes, I think municipalities that are very heavily exposed and of course can't relocate or reorient their businesses completely might have to avail of these insurance over a period of time. But to just go to the second point that you mentioned, Tim, I fully agree. While this is less of an option for municipalities, for companies, we think that the message is that perhaps if they do not want to increase their credit risk by taking on more debt while trying to do the adaptive measures, one option could also, of course, be to go in for equity or longer term debt. Mm-hmm. Of course, at some level, climate stress is priced more there, but at least they would not face rollover risk very quickly during the process of transforming into a less exposed company. And if they do that, you know, the gains would actually be quite significant as well, because you reduce your long run cost of borrowing and equity financing the most when you reduce your exposure to physical risks.
Well, clearly, these are very important problems to solve for municipalities and firms as well. So we'll be seeing over the next decade, two decades, exactly how they do solve them. Be very interesting to look out for that. Viral, for now, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Tim.
The paper is called Is Physical Climate Risk Priced? Evidence from Regional Variation in Exposure to Heat Stress. And the authors are Viral Acharya, Timothy Johnson, Suresh Sundaresan, and Thomas Tumanon. It is discussion paper 17516 at CPR.
Next time on Vox Talks Economics, should countries cooperate to control epidemics?